A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's trying to build a parking occupancy sensor with an ESP32 and a LoRa radio transmitter sitting next to his indoor parking spot. And he wants to know if the signal can punch through a few floors of concrete up to a receiver in the building. He noticed the frequency differences across regions, the regulatory limits on transmission power, and he's asking about the real-world gotchas, interference, competing signals, all the stuff that doesn't show up on the spec sheet. And honestly, this is the exact moment where LoRaWAN stops being a magic bullet and starts being a physics problem.
It really is. Because here's the thing, 2G and 3G are sunsetting, Wi-Fi can't reach three floors down through rebar, so LoRaWAN is the obvious choice for low-power wide-area IoT right now. But the gap between this chip can do 15 kilometers line of sight, and I can't reach my parking spot two stories up, is where most projects die. And it's not a mystery, it's just that the regulatory constraints and the physical layer behavior are completely non-obvious until you hit them.
The spec sheet optimism versus the concrete reality.
Literally concrete. Yeah. So let's break down exactly what's happening when that LoRa packet tries to punch through three floors of reinforced concrete.
You've got your little ESP32 with an SX176 radio. You're transmitting at 868 MHz or 915 depending on where you live. And the signal just... And the first thing to understand is that LoRa isn't one radio. It's a dozen different radios depending on which country you're in.
The same silicon, the exact same SX176 chip, operates on completely different frequencies depending on the region. In Europe, you're on the 868 MHz ISM band. In North America, you're on 92 to 928 MHz. In parts of Asia, it's 923. And these aren't just different numbers on a dial. They come with entirely different power limits, duty cycle rules, and channel plans.
You can buy a board off AliExpress, plug it in, and it's effectively illegal and non-functional depending on where you are.
In the US, the 915 MHz ISM band lets you transmit at up to 1 watt. That's 30 dBm ERP. In Europe, on the 868 MHz band, you're capped at 25 milliwatts, which is 14 dBm for most of the usable subbands. That's a 16 dB difference right out of the gate. If you take a US-configured board to Europe, not only is it illegal, it won't even work with the local gateways because they're listening on completely different frequencies.
Before you even think about concrete attenuation, you've already lost 16 decibels just by being in the wrong regulatory regime.
That's just the power limit. Then you've got the duty cycle constraints. In Europe, under ETSI EN300.220, the 868.0 to 868.6 MHz subband has a 1% duty cycle limit. That means if your device transmits for 1 second, it has to stay silent for 99 seconds.
Which for a parking sensor sending a 50-byte uplink every 5 minutes is totally fine. But if you think, oh, I'll just pull it every 10 seconds to get near real-time occupancy data, congratulations, you've just been kicked off the network.
The gateway will drop your packets, and the Things Network's fair use policy will flag you. In the US, the FCC doesn't mandate a duty cycle limit on 915 MHz, so technically you could transmit more often. But public networks like the Things Network still enforce a 1% fair use policy, so practically you're in the same boat either way.
Then there's the subband fragmentation within the band itself, which is its own special nightmare. In Europe, the 868.7 to 869.2 subband allows 25 milliwatts, but only 0.1% duty cycle. The 869.4 to 869.65 subband allows 500 milliwatts, that's half a watt, but only 10% duty cycle, so you can't just crank the power. You have to pick the subband that matches your application's transmission pattern.
You're trading power for airtime. And that brings us to spreading factors, which is where the physical layer really gets interesting. LoRa uses these orthogonal spreading factors, SF7 through SF12. SF7 is fast, about 5.5 kilobits per second, but it has the shortest range. SF-12 is slow, 293 bits per second, but it can be decoded all the way down to minus 137 dBm, which is absurdly sensitive.
The trade-off is time on air. A 50-byte packet at SF-7 takes about 50 milliseconds. The same packet at SF-12 takes roughly 1.5 seconds. That's 30 times longer. And on a 1% duty cycle network, that 1.5 seconds eats 1.5% of your allowance in a single transmission.
If you're on SF-12 and you transmit once every 5 minutes, you're fine. That's well under 1%. But if the network's adaptive data rate algorithm tries to push you to SF7 to save airtime, and your signal can't actually reach the gateway at SF7, you lose packets. And ADR assumes a stable channel, which a parking garage absolutely is not.
Because cars move, people walk around, the channel changes constantly. ADR sees a moment of good signal, nudges you down to SF7, and then a minivan parks between your sensor and the stairwell, and suddenly you're offline.
Which brings us to the actual physics of concrete. The ITU-RP 0.2040 model gives us some hard numbers. At 868 MHz, a 20-centimeter concrete wall with rebar, which is basically every structural wall in a modern building, attenuates the signal by 15 to 25 decibels.
Let's do the math. You're in Europe, your transmitter is at 14 dBm. The gateway's sensitivity at SF12 is minus 137 dBm. That gives you a link budget of 151 decibels. But three floors of concrete slab with rebar. That's not three walls, that's three floor slabs, each one easily eating 20 dB. So you've lost 60 dB before the signal even leaves the building.
Now you're down to 91 dB of effective link budget. And you still need to account for the actual distance, in the other walls, multipath fading, antenna misalignment, and the fact that the car itself is a metal box. If your sensor is inside the vehicle, you've just added another 20 to 30 dB of attenuation from the car body.
Your 151 dB link budget evaporates fast. And there's a real case from the Things Network forum. Someone reported losing 30 dB of signal just moving from a fifth floor window to a ground floor parking garage with the gateway on the roof. Horizontal distance was only 50 meters. The vertical path through the building killed the link.
That's the thing that spec sheets don't tell you. 15 kilometers range is line of sight over flat terrain with clear Fresnel zone clearance. It's not through a parking structure. A single parking level can be the equivalent of a kilometer of open air in terms of attenuation.
Then you add interference on top of that. The ISM bands are shared. In Europe at 868 MHz, you're competing with GSM-R for railways, some DE-sect cordless phones, and every other LoRa device in range. In the US at 915, Zigbee channels 25 and 26 overlap. Some older 900 MHz cordless phones, industrial RFID readers. And the biggest problem is other LoRaWAN devices.
LoRaWAN uses Aloha-style random access. There's no listen before talk, no collision avoidance. If two devices transmit at the same time on the same frequency and the same spreading factor, both packets are lost. The network just hopes they don't. And in a dense urban area with hundreds of devices per gateway, they do.
You've got concrete eating your signal, regulations capping your power, duty cycle limiting your airtime, ADR fighting you, and other devices stomping on your packets. And you're just trying to figure out if your parking spot is free.
Which is why the solutions are counterintuitive. Most people think, I'll just add more power. But in Europe, you can't. And in the US, more power doesn't help if the problem is multipath fading rather than simple path loss. If the signal is bouncing off concrete walls and arriving at the gateway out of phase, doubling your transmit power just gives you a louder canceled signal.
The actual fix for indoor parking garages is to manually lock the spreading factor to SF12 and disable ADR entirely. The network wants to optimize for throughput, but you need range. Accept the 1.5 second time on air. Accept the battery hit. And stop letting the algorithm guess wrong every time a car moves.
There's a Reddit case study on exactly this. Someone put a LoRa transmitter in a basement parking garage with the gateway on the 10th floor. At SF12, they got 80% packet success. At SF7, 0%. The ADR algorithm kept trying to push them to SF7, breaking the link entirely. They had to manually lock SF12 to make it work.
80% is not great, by the way. For a parking sensor, maybe it's acceptable. You miss an update here and there. But if you're doing anything safety critical or real time, that's a problem.
That's where you start looking at alternatives. NB-IoT uses lower frequencies, 700 to 900 MHz, which penetrate buildings better. But you need a SIM card, a monthly fee, and the peak current draw is around 200 milliamps, which is brutal for battery life. LoRaWAN wins on cost and battery life, but it loses on reliability in deep indoor environments.
The parking sensor project sits at this interesting intersection. It's exactly the kind of thing LoRaWAN was designed for. Low data rate, infrequent updates, battery-powered, cheap hardware. But the physical environment is about as hostile as it gets for sub-gigahertz radio.
That's before we even talk about antenna placement, which is where a lot of these projects get salvaged. A quarter-wave monopole at 868 MHz is about 8.6 centimeters. For indoor-to-outdoor paths, an external antenna with 3 to 6 dB of gain can make the difference between zero packets and 80%.
Higher gain means a narrower beam. A 6 dB panel antenna pointed at the parking area will reject noise from the sides, but it requires precise aiming. If you mount it wrong, you're beaming your signal into a concrete pillar.
The gateway placement matters enormously. Put it as high as possible, near an external wall or a window. The signal path from a window down to the parking garage is way better than from a central corridor because you're avoiding multiple interior walls. Every interior wall is another 10 to 15 dB.
The car itself is a variable attenuator. If the sensor is mounted inside the vehicle, you've got a metal Faraday cage around your transmitter. The fix is simple. Mount the sensor on the ceiling or wall of the parking spot, not inside the car. But it's the kind of thing you don't think about until you've already installed it and nothing works.
Then there's the battery math, which is where spreading factor choice really bites you. An ESP32 in deep sleep draws about 10 microamps. Waking up, reading a magnetic sensor, and transmitting a 50-byte packet at SF7 takes about 50 milliseconds at 50 milliamps. At SF12, the same packet takes 1.5 seconds at 50 milliamps.
If you transmit once per minute, SF7 gives you about 3.5 years on a 2,000 milliamp hour battery. SF12 gives you about 6 months. For a parking sensor sending once every 5 or 10 minutes, both are fine. But if you tried to track real-time occupancy changes, every 30 seconds, you'll drain the battery in months, not years.
That's the thing Daniel's really asking about, I think. The gotchas aren't in the protocol spec. They're in the interaction between the protocol and the real world. The regulations you didn't know about, the concrete you can't avoid, the algorithm that's trying to help but making things worse, the interference from devices you can't see.
The spec sheet says kilometers of range. The building says no.
What makes LoRaWAN genuinely different from the alternatives is that it's optimized for exactly this asymmetry. Wi-Fi and Bluetooth are designed for high data rate, low latency, two-way communication over short distances. Cellular IoT like NB-IoT or LTE, M gives you better building penetration and higher reliability, but you're paying for it with a SIM card, a monthly subscription, and power draw that's an order of magnitude higher.
Wi-Fi at 2.4 GHz through 3 floors of concrete is a non-starter. That's 60 to 80 dB of attenuation easy. Bluetooth's even worse. It's designed for the room you're standing in. LoRaWAN is the only thing in this space that says, I will trade basically everything, speed, latency, bidirectional reliability, for the ability to whisper across a building on a battery that lasts years.
That trade-off is encoded in the physical layer. LoRa uses chirp spread spectrum modulation. The signal sweeps across the channel bandwidth in a way that makes it incredibly resistant to noise and interference. That's how you get that minus 137 dBm sensitivity at SF12. For context, that's below the thermal noise floor. The receiver is literally pulling the signal out of noise you can't even measure with basic equipment.
Which is wild when you think about it. The gateway can hear a transmission that's quieter than the random electromagnetic background of the universe. But concrete doesn't care how clever your modulation is. It's just a physical barrier.
And this is the core tension Daniel's walking into. LoRaWAN occupies this unique niche, sub-gigahertz ISM bands, kilometers of range at sub-250 kilobits per second, optimized for infrequent sensor uplinks. A parking occupancy sensor is the textbook use case. An ESP32 with an SX127 TIX, a magnetic or ultrasonic sensor, waking up every few minutes to send a handful of bytes saying occupied or free to a gateway somewhere upstairs. The protocol was built for this.
The advertised kilometer range is line of sight over open terrain with clear Fresnel zones. The moment you put three floors of reinforced concrete between the transmitter and the gateway, you're not in Kansas anymore. You're in a world where every floor slab is eating 15 to 25 decibels of your signal, per the ITU model, and you only started with a link budget that looks generous on paper but vanishes fast in practice.
That's really the setup here. Daniel's got the right hardware, the right use case, the right protocol. Everything on paper says this should work. But the building is a radio obstacle course, the regulations are region locked in ways that aren't obvious when you're buying a board online, and the network's own optimization algorithms can actively sabotage a marginal link.
The question isn't, can LoRaWAN do this? It's what do you need to know to make LoRaWAN actually do this in a building that's doing everything it can to stop you? Okay, so it's a mess. But here's exactly what you can do to make your parking sensor actually work. Four things, in order.
First, before you buy anything, check your regional frequency allocation. An 868 MHz board will not talk to a 915 MHz gateway. They're different radios as far as the network is concerned. Use a multi-band module like the SX176, which covers both, and configure the correct band in software. If you're in Europe, you're on 868. In the US, 915. Get this wrong and nothing else matters.
Second, for indoor parking garages, manually lock your spreading factor to SF12 and disable ADR. The network will try to optimize you down to SF7 for throughput, and it will break your link every time a car moves. Accept the 1.5 second time on air. Accept the battery hit and stop letting an algorithm that assumes a stable channel make decisions for a channel that is anything but stable.
The Reddit case study we mentioned, basement to 10th floor, SF12 gave 80% packet success. SF7 gave 0. ADR kept pushing to SF7. The fix was manual lock. It's not elegant, but it works.
Third, gateway placement. As high as possible, near an external wall or a window. The signal path from a window down to the parking garage avoids multiple interior walls, each of which is another 10 to 15 dB. Use an external antenna with 3 to 6 dB of gain. A quarter wave monopole is fine for line of sight, but you're not doing line of sight. Get a proper antenna and point it at the parking area.
Fourth, test before you deploy. Walk around the parking garage with a LoRa sniffer, which is just a second ESP32 with a LoRa module running an RSSI scan. Map the actual signal strength at each parking spot. Don't assume the link budget math works. Concrete is unpredictable. Rebar placement, slab thickness, nearby metal, all of it varies. The ITU model gives you a range of 15 to 25 dB per wall. That's a 10 dB spread. You need the measure.
These four steps will get you from, why doesn't this work, to my parking spot is free, without tearing your hair out. Check the band, lock the spreading factor, place the gateway smart, and measure the actual signal. Everything else is optimization.
Those four steps will get you a working prototype. But the bigger question is, will LoRaWAN still be the right choice in 5 years?
That's the thing. As more people figure out that LoRaWAN is the answer for these kinds of projects, the ISM bands get more crowded, and ALOSHA doesn't scale gracefully. A few hundred devices per gateway, and you start seeing collision rates that make 80% packet success look like a good day.
It's the fundamental tension of unlicensed spectrum. The barrier to entry is zero. No SIM card, no carrier contract, just buy a board and start transmitting. Which is exactly why it's so popular. But that same zero barrier means everyone else is doing it too, and there's no central coordination. In a dense urban area, you could have dozens of buildings all running parking sensors, water meters, temperature loggers, all sharing the same 8 channels.
The protocol's response to congestion is basically, transmit again later in hope, which works fine at low density. Falls apart fast when you've got 300 devices all hoping at the same gateway.
LoRaWAN 1.1 adds some improvements. better roaming between gateways, multicast support for firmware updates. But it doesn't fix the physics. Concrete is still concrete, the ISM bands are still shared, and the ALOHE access method is still fundamentally the same.
For deep indoor applications like Daniel's parking sensor, I think we're going to see a shift. As LTE, M, and NB-IoT module costs keep dropping, some are already flirting with the $5 mark. The calculus changes. You get better building penetration from the lower frequencies. You get coordinated spectrum access instead of random ALOHA. And you get carrier-grade reliability.
The trade-off flips. Right now, LoRaWAN wins because it's cheap and the battery life is incredible. But if an NB-IoT module costs $5 and lasts 2 years on a battery instead of 5, and it actually works reliably from a basement parking garage, a lot of people are going to make that trade.
The question Daniel's parking sensor is really asking, underneath all the spreading factors and duty cycles, is how much reliability do I actually need, and what am I willing to pay for it? Right now, the answer for most hobbyists is LoRaWAN with SF12 locked and a prayer. In 5 years, it might be a $5 cellular module that just works.
That's the arc of this whole space. The protocols don't change that fast, but the economics do. What's a frustrating physics puzzle today becomes a solved problem tomorrow. Not because the physics changed, but because the alternative got cheap enough to stop caring about the physics.
Until then, lock your spreading factor, point your antenna out the window, and don't trust the algorithm.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1960s, researchers analyzing dust deposits on the Azores discovered that Saharan dust storms were transporting not just mineral particles, but also measurable quantities of organophosphate pesticides, chemicals that had been applied to crops in North Africa, thousands of kilometers away, and lifted into the upper troposphere by convective storms over the Sahara.
The Sahara was airmailing pesticide to the middle of the Atlantic.
This has been My Weird Prompts, with me, Herman Poppleberry, and my brother Korn. Produced by Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. We'll be back soon with another prompt from Daniel.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.